Main menu.
Main menu.
Main menu.
Main menu.
Hello and a very warm welcome to Main Menu, ATB Radio Mainstream's regular look at technology from a blinder's perspective. Main Menu is first broadcast on ATB Radio Mainstream every Wednesday from 1 Universal, and in the United States that's Tuesday evening at 8 Eastern, 5 Pacific. Main Menu is made available to radio reading information services around the world, and is also available on demand from the ATB Radio website. Coming up on Main Menu this week, there's just one story. We profile Abhay Patel from the Huge Print Press. We talk about the issues confronting people with low vision and the importance of material being available in large print. That's coming up this week on Main Menu. Main Menu recently spoke to Abhay Patel from the Huge Print Press. We began by asking Abhay about his background.
My background is I was diagnosed with juvenile macular degeneration in seventh grade. I had a differential diagnosis, and so I was diagnosed with several different conditions at the same time. The one that most people are probably familiar with would be Stargardt's. Because I was so young, and because it's rare that you see these sort of conditions in people, people that age, it's difficult for physicians sometimes to pinpoint a particular diagnosis. But my vision since the seventh grade had deteriorated in several stages, and as I grew older, it became increasingly difficult for me, as I'm sure many of you can relate to read, and to read normal textbooks, to read novels like everybody else. And fortunately, I was able to sort of fight through high school and fight through college, and then sort of join the workforce. But recently, I decided to go back to law school. And I started law school at the Boston University School of Law a couple of years ago. And when I went back to school, I realized that my vision had deteriorated enough that I wouldn't be able to read the normal font books, even squinting, even if I sacrificed lunches and sleep and all that other good stuff. And I realized that something needed to be done. So that kind of I kind of set out and started looking for large sources for large print books. Generally, and I'd done that in the past and kind of run into walls, but I thought that, it had been several years since I'd been an undergrad, and I figured that things had evolved by then and there were resources available. So I contacted the typical sources, American Printing House for the Blind and LRS and, a couple of other outfits, and asked them if they could produce my books for me in large print. And they told me they could, but they told me it'd take 3 months to do it. And I told them, well, finals would be over by that time. It didn't make any sense. And then I asked them one other question, that even if they could turn it around faster, could they do it in a particular font size that I need? And they informed me that for the most part it'd be limited to 16-18 font, and I'd be reading books horizontally.
For those of us that are totally blind, clearly, sure. The point size refers to the physical size of the font. What's the regular size print that most people read? Is it point size 12?
Sure. It's actually less than it's 12 on the high end. If you went into, a bookstore and just bought a book or picked up a magazine in a stand, the font size that you'd most typically be confronted with would be somewhere in the 8 to 10 range. Sometimes you'll see books printed in 12 font.
So compared to 16 and 18, that sounds quite small.
It is. And if you talk to even individuals who still have most of their vision, 8 and 10 font for them is fairly small. It's difficult for sighted people to read those font sizes without having some sort of equipment. Obviously, most of the times it's glasses or contact
lenses. And the size, is that the only factor really? Is it just about getting things to be bigger? I know certainly when using OCR software that sometimes if the font is a particular style, or if the background is of a certain color, or if there isn't sufficient contrast between the foreground and the background, then it can be difficult for OCR technology to read. Is that the same for people?
Absolutely. I think if you talk to people on the street and say, hey, can you read, you know, if you put them in a room that has, that's well lighted, and you put them in a darker room, they're going to tell you that it's easier to read in the first room. And it's just like for individuals with, you know, retinal deterioration or any other sort of eye condition that has caused significant vision loss, the more light you have, the more contrast there is between the lettering and the background, the easier it's going to be to read.
Right. So you identified a number of issues that confronted people with low vision who were trying to access text. Obviously, the point size, and we talked about contrast and lighting and that sort of thing. And you felt that there was a real shortage. We certainly know this with Braille, that only a very small fraction of material that is published in print is ever converted into Braille, and so that's the same with large print.
That's exactly right, Dave. And I mean, and I didn't do an empirical study of the field. I just kind of went off my own experiences and said, if I was going to be able to go through school the second time around, I needed books that I could read. You know, that I couldn't. You know, just like I think that students who are blind face, you know, disability services professionals that sort of dictate to them what accommodations they ought to be using. The same thing confronts the large print. Well, I mean, the low vision community. You know, you have all these directors of disabilities that aren't blind, don't have low vision, or in many cases don't have any disability of any kind, dictating to those with disabilities what accommodations they ought to be using.
Now, are you talking exclusively here about academic texts, or are we talking about all texts in general, literature?
We can have the conversation in two contexts. One would be the academic, and when you're talking about in the academic context, you're dealing with disability services offices. But when you move outside of the academic context, now you're talking about publishers who, in my opinion, and I think in the opinion of many, have turned their back on the Americans with Disabilities Act or other acts that are out there in other nations that address the needs for the disability community. They've essentially ignored the blind and low vision community. Mm. And because we don't have lobbying groups that are aggressive enough, ambitious enough, if you will, nasty enough,
so you feel this is something that the consumer movements perhaps should take on, the ACB and NFB should take on to lobby publishers that not just Braille but large print needs to be made available also in order to meet the requirements of the ADA.
Absolutely. I think two things need to happen. I think one, and I think in England there you see the Right to Read campaign.
Mm-hmm.
That is something that's ongoing, and I think that's wonderful. We don't have a movement like that here in the United States, and I think we ought to, and I imagine other countries ought to have that same sort of movement. I think in addition to HPP, let's put that aside for a second. I formed a sister organization called the Advocates for the Visually Impaired, whose goal it is to become a powerful voice for the low vision community. And I think that two things ought to happen. I think one, we need to address the issues facing the blind low vision community separately in some contexts. I think what the tendency of a lot of people to do is, because all of our experiences are so similar and we all sort of understand one another, we then assume that the issues facing each community is the same. Well, in some cases they are. In terms of publishers turning their backs on our groups, no doubt that's a battle we should fight together. In terms of accessibility, there's no doubt that's a fight that should be fought together. But in terms of accommodations that are needed, the answers for the blind student are not the same, are not the right answers for the low vision student. We need to recognize that the needs facing the low vision community and the needs facing the totally blind community are different in some contexts.
Yeah, the specifics of those needs are probably different, but in terms of the fundamental thing, and you mentioned the Right to Read campaign in the UK, and that's really important, that reading is a basic right, you know, that people should be able to access, the media and access academic texts and literature and so on. We've kind of drifted a little bit, and I know this is a very emotive subject for many, but let's try and stay focused if we can. So this was your perception in growing up, and you really encountered this in education. And what happened then? This is when you were in high school, or this is when
when I was in high school, my vision had started to deteriorate, and I was able to hold on to a significant part of it, and I'm fortunate now that I still have significant functional vision. And in high school, I was, you know, my vision was just starting, deterioration was just starting to set in, so I was able to struggle through by, you know, following the teacher around in the classroom, getting right on top of the board so that I could take notes, getting very close to my book with lots of lighting so that I could read it. When I got to college, my vision had gotten a little worse, and I talked to the, you know, counselors at the university, and sometime, you know, in a couple of semesters, I blew up my textbooks to 11 by 17. You know, I'd go to the copy machine and basically just put the book on top of the copy machine and reproduce it on 11 by 17 pages, and if it blew up words, it blew up, and that'd be great, and if it didn't, which most times it didn't,
Why wouldn't enlarging using a photocopier work? Why isn't that a good solution for everybody? Surely if I go out and buy a regular book, I can take it down the library and get it enlarged, and I might have to pay a small amount to, or is it a small? Let's talk about that.
Yeah, it is, relatively speaking. It is certainly a small amount. I mean, it's just going down to the local Kinko's, paying 10 or 20 cents or whatever copy shop there is to enlarge the book. But the reason it doesn't make sense as accommodation is twofold. One is most times those books will not enlarge the text, because if you look at the margins of textbooks, the publishers like to utilize as much space as they possibly can. And so if you look to the left of the wording and if you look to the right of the wording, you'll see that there's not a whole lot of room to grow, if you will, for the words. And to the extent that sometimes that a sentence is just written from left to right and there's nothing in the margins,
right.
Best case scenario, the size.
What about going on to A3? If you were to enlarge onto a larger sheet of paper as a facility for doing that at most copy shops?
Or? Yeah, that's what you'd be doing, Dave. You'd be enlarging it onto 11 by 17, so you'd be taking a typical, you know, 8 by 11 page textbook and enlarging it onto 11 by 17,
right,
which is the biggest paper out there, and then you enlarge it as much as you can. But you're restricted from the top and the bottom margins are restricted. You'll see very little growth in the wording from the top to the bottom. To the left or right, you're also restricted, not as much, because there's just not a lot of room left on either margin.
And what happens in terms of the print quality when you take that approach?
It deteriorates. You know, you're obviously taking a textbook that is in color, or even if it's in black and white, that's on nice paper, that has clean wording, and you're enlarging it onto, you know, just generic paper on a copy machine. Well, the wording has a tendency of becoming a little blurred, because even if you rip the spine off of a book, and sometimes you do that, sometimes you wouldn't, sometimes the sentences tend to become crooked towards the end of the page. You'll see that parts of the page will move from being in total black and white space to move into spacing that is more dark, and everything just becomes much more obscured when you do that. On top of everything, if you have a clean reproduction, if you have a very small book with good margins that can reproduce in large print, your margins are still, in the best case, your wording is only going to go to about 16 font, in the best case.
Okay.
And then you're still stuck with carrying 11 by 17 pages around campus.
Sure. Let's go back then. You were at college then. You mentioned the campus there. You were at college, and sometimes you were able to access material, sometimes you weren't. Do you feel that impeded your studies?
There's no question. I mean, I think that when you talk about how much time I had to spend to read a book versus how much time I would have had to spend if I had the appropriate accommodations, it's unbelievable how much more time for me was wasted. I mean, I slept 5 hours a night in college because it took me 8 hours to read an assignment, that took everybody else 3 hours to read. And I'm not saying, and I'm not complaining about that, because sometimes the onus is on us. I mean, we're going to have to work harder. The blind students are going to have to work harder. Low vision students are going to have to work harder. There's no question. But the question is, are we working, and if the reason we're working harder is because a school is unwilling to provide the appropriate accommodations, now we have a right to stand up and say this isn't right. If we have appropriate accommodations and still, because of our disability, it takes a little bit longer, but instead of 8 hours it takes five, well, you know what, we're unique. We do have a challenge that we have to face. Everybody in life faces a different challenge. This is our challenge, and we've got to step up to that challenge. But the question is, when does the challenge that we're asked to face in the academic and professional context become unreasonable?
Yep.
And when is that unreasonable based on those entities unwilling to address the needs of our communities? Then when that line is passed, that's when we've got to stand up and say enough is enough.
Stand up and say enough is enough. I'm Dave Williams. You're listening to ACB Radio Main Menu, a weekly look at technology from a blindness perspective. We're in conversation with Abhay Patel from the Huge Print Press, and we're talking about the issues facing low vision print readers. Okay, Abhay, what happened when you left college?
When I left college, I was, I entered the workforce, and I worked worked for American Airlines, a big airline. And then I was fortunate enough to go to New York and work for an investment banking firm there. And so I've been about 5 years working. And for that 5 year period, I was fortunate enough to do most of my work on the computer. And I did most of my work with numbers and Excel. And I was able to just sort of enlarge those numbers as much as possible. And I was able to sort of get away with it.
So do you use the bespoke screen magnification software then?
Or there's one thing that I use. I didn't use software, but the one thing that I did use was a CCTV.
Right.
And I use that selectively. CCTVs are great, but they're great for spot reading. And so sometimes if I had to put numbers under the screen to look at them, I'd look at them. But
right.
if I had to read several articles in the Wall Street Journal, for me it made more sense to subscribe online, copy the article from the Wall Street Journal into Word, and then print out those pages so that I could read it in the appropriate font size.
You mentioned enlarging the cells on a spreadsheet. So did you just use the facilities that are within Windows for that? Or
that's right. I was fortunate enough to be able to do that, fortunately for me, being able to enlarge it on the computer worked because I was still able to retain a good significant portion of my vision relative to others, and so I was able to get by with that. And the nature of the work that I was doing, I wasn't asked to read for hours a day.
Mm-hmm.
It was a half hour here, an hour there,
right.
And even when I was working, I was putting in significantly longer hours than my peers. But again,
and you're not getting paid extra for those hours.
You're not getting paid extra for it. But you know what? That's just something that you have to do, and I didn't have a problem with that.
No,
because I recognized that the firm that I was working for was doing all they could for me.
Yeah.
And if I was going to be able to compete, then I would have to go the extra mile, and I was willing to do that.
So by and large, you did have the support of your employer. That's encouraging to hear. So let's just clarify for people. Certainly on a computer, you can use the basic enlargement technologies that are built into Windows, but that's a bit like Narrator. Narrator is a basic screen reader, I guess you might call it, that will speak certain parts of the screen, but it won't speak everything. And as I understand it, Abhay, the magnification features within Windows work similarly in that they will enlarge certain components of Windows, but it doesn't enlarge everything. It certainly doesn't give you the flexibility that a bespoke screen magnification package would. Did you find that in your experience?
Yeah, I did. There is software now out there, Zoom Text and other software that enables you, text and large screen.
Magic and Luna and
screen readers that enable you to do that. So I think that issue, that while Windows and other programs might be limited, I think the issue goes away because of the available software. But the problem still lies in the problem is, Dave, even if I'm using a screen reader like Zoom Text, why is someone with vision loss being asked to sit in front of a computer for hours a day to read?
Yeah.
I mean, that doesn't make any sense to me.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you can, depending on the study you look at, some people say it worsens your vision or it doesn't worsen your vision to sit in front of a computer and get real close to it. The question is, what strain does it have on your vision?
Yeah.
I mean, your eyes still grow tired. I mean, I sit in front of a computer for 3 hours and I get exhausted. And so even if people come to you and say, look, well, you have these screen readers that can enlarge the text now, so just read it on the computer, I would tell them, why don't you sit in front of a computer for 8 hours a day and read? Now magnify that by 100 times.
Mm-hmm.
The strain, the amount of strain that my eyes would feel versus your eyes.
It's a health risk. Now, let's talk then some more. So you were employed after leaving college. You worked for American Airlines and you worked for an investment bank. That was for 5 years.
Well, I'd always wanted to go to law school. I mean, I have a passion for advocacy and wanted to go study law and ultimately practice law and address many of the issues that we've talked about today and mm-hmm. many other issues that affect our society. And I wanted to go to law school. And to go to law school, as you know, you have to read a lot.
Mm.
And if I was going to get through and be competitive in my law school class, yeah. It was critical for me to be able to get books that I could read.
And it's important to emphasize that reading a lot point with law, because my sister started studying law, and I think she transferred to English, and she found that reading literature, there was actually less reading involved with a literature degree than there was with law.
There's no doubt. I mean, you're asked to read, you know, pages upon pages upon pages when you're reading the law, and mm-hmm. also, you know, the language is a bit more complex than some of the language you confront in the literature. So it's, you know, you really need to be able to sit down, be patient, and have a lot of stamina for reading. You know, whether you're reading Braille, listening to books on tape, or being able to read large print or normal font material, you still need to have the stamina to consume enormous amounts of content.
There'll be those sitting at home listening to this, possibly people who are totally blind, who use OCR technology, and they scan pretty much most things that they read. Can you describe to us why you feel that there's something intrinsically important for a low vision person to be able to read from from a physical page?
Reading is, you said earlier, is a right. You know, I believe it is a civil right, and when people grow up, for those of us who have been fortunate enough to have some vision in our early years and had the opportunity to read books and magazines, physical books and magazines, there's something about being able to sit in your bed, crawl into bed and read your favorite novel. There's something about being able to, you know, recline in your bark lounger at home and read a book. There's something about being able to go to a coffee shop and be able to read that makes people feel free and independent. And when you take that ability away, when it's available, and tell them, no, the only way you can read now is in front of a computer.
Uh-huh.
It's restrictive. It affects the way that the person feels about themselves and feels about what they're able to do and what they're able to accomplish.
Right.
It sends the message that now your options in life are limited. And that's the worst thing we can do, because once we set an individual, once we put an individual on that train of thought, it's a runaway caboose, if you will. There's no end to it. Once we tell a person that, no, you can't read on a plane like everybody else, you can't go to a beach and read like everybody else, you can't carry around your book like everybody else, you can't follow the teacher in class like everybody else, we're not only telling them that they can't do those things, we're also telling them that they can't do lots and lots of other things. And while you might have an optimistic person in the beginning, by the time the effect of that mentality sets in, that person has gone from thinking that they can conquer the world to thinking that they're lucky just to get through on a daily basis. And it's a defeatist mindset that the non-visually impaired community is putting on the visually impaired community, and I think it's criminal. And beyond that, taking away a person's right to dream and to be like everyone else, when you're telling someone that you have a vision impairment and you have to read on a computer, you're telling that person that they're taking an additional physical burden that no one else is having to take. If you're telling me that I can read large print books, but it'd be easier for you to give me a screen reader, then I would tell you, make all of my peers read on a screen reader as well. Don't take away the competitive advantage. Don't exacerbate the competitive advantage that they have over me by restricting me further. Give me the opportunity to compete at the same level that everybody else competes. Don't ask me to worsen my vision because you don't want to accommodate the needs of my disability or my challenge.
I'm Dave Williams. You're listening to ACB Radio Mainstream's Main Menu. We're in the conversation with Abhay Patel from the Huge Print press, and Mr. Patel believes quite strongly, as you've just been hearing, that there is an intrinsic right of people with low vision to be able to access the printed word from the page, and that screen reading and OCR is not always an appropriate solution.
James, I think it goes a step further, if you, if you allow me. We have realized that there's so many of the similar issues facing the blind community. You said earlier you get tired of having to listen.
Absolutely, yeah. Completely, yeah.
And that you want to be able to have access to Braille. To us, that's something that we're starting to take on. We're in our infancy stages. But one thing we've done is said we realize that one of the things that's helpful to those in the blind community is e-text and e-text on demand, and providing services, and it makes it easier to reproduce material in Braille if a school can get a hold of e-text. And for those who do enjoy reading, it's a lot easier if they can get that e-text on demand. So we sort of expanded and said not only will we provide a large print, we feel like there's a real need for e-text on demand as well. So we've taken it a step further to say, look, those individuals who read and read with Braille want to be able to follow the teacher in class, want to be able to take the books around, just like the low vision students take a large print book around as well. And so we've expanded the services that we're providing,
We'll get to talking about what Huge Print Press does and the services that you offer and how people can get in touch and that kind of thing. Just while we're on this, and I do want to pick up your biography at some stage, we're kind of all over the place today. Can you just address the issue of magnification? There are a lot of handheld magnification devices on the market. There are some portable electronic devices available now, which I understand can magnify text. There will be people listening who will perhaps be wondering, why is that not a good solution?
When you use these handheld devices, and I've used it all, and I've talked to lots of people with low vision that have used them in the past.
Yeah.
There's a dizzying effect to it. It's not as efficient. Mm-hmm. Can you read the ingredients on the back of a can of soup or a bottle of medication? Mm-hmm. No question. Absolutely. Those handheld magnifiers, CCTVs, whatever you want to refer to them as, have a purpose, and that purpose is spot reading. But if you want to read a magazine, if you want to read a book, and if you use one of these magnifiers, it can only allow for you to read a few words at a time without having to scroll back and forth, up and down.
When somebody's reading with a magnifier, essentially they're looking through a small window onto a small portion of the page. Is that right? They're not seeing the formatting, the layout, and it's difficult to find your place and that sort of thing.
That's exactly right. That's exactly what's happening. So even if you get beyond the portability issue of the traditional CCTV, you're still dealing with the issue that you just described. And I spoke with a manufacturer of one of these the devices at a conference this past summer. And I told him, I said, look, I've used this equipment in the past, but I found myself getting very dizzy, and it slows me down significantly in terms of my reading speed. And the person responded, this is an executive with one of these magnifiers, and this is what his response to me was. We have lots of individuals that have the same problem that you do, over half. What we recommend that they do is take Dramamine. This is an individual that manufactures these magnifying...
Don't people take that because when they get sick when they fly?
Exactly. Promotion sickness. This is an executive of a magnifier manufacturer saying to use our product that they
medication.
Tell us a panacea for the low vision community, that you ought to take medication when you use it. Are you kidding me?
ACB Radio Mainstream, and you're listening to Main Menu, a regular look at technology from a blindness and low vision perspective. We're talking with Ebbe Patel from the Huge Print Press. Let's try and keep our eye on the ball and go back to where we were with your autobiography, Ebbe. You worked for 5 years, as you mentioned, and then where were we?
Started law school.
You're in law school now, right?
Right.
Okay.
Right. When I first got to Boston University, I went and spoke with the Disability Services Office and let them know that I'd be coming, that I'd be in the need of large print. Well, they said, we've had low vision students in the past. Don't worry, we'll take care of it. And I explained to them, look, I'd like to have my books physical so I can take it around and be like everybody else. They said, don't worry, we'll do it. So I got to school and, been in constant contact with them. I got to school and went to the office and said, look, class is starting in a few days. Where are we? And the person said, and I won't mention his name, the person said, well, we've got all your books at the local Kinko's. What they're doing is scanning them in for you, and then you can use a screen reader to then either...
This is going back to the problem we were talking about earlier.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And they said you can either listen to the text, you know, we'll provide a software that enable you to listen to the text, mm-hmm. or you can enlarge it on the screen. Or if you want to, they can just copy all the pages for you on 11 by 17, and that'll give you what you need. And I told this person, I said, that's unacceptable.
So they weren't listening to your needs. You feel quite strongly that when you went to law school, they weren't really listening to that. They already had a preconception about what they thought you should have, rather than letting you determine the format in which you received your materials.
That's exactly right. And not only were they not asking me and listening to me about the appropriate accommodations, Dave, they were telling me what accommodations were appropriate. You know, you have someone with perfect vision,
yeah.
and near a disability, telling someone with affected vision and a disability and a challenge
mm-hmm.
what their accommodation ought to be.
Mm-hmm.
To me, the roles are inversed. 6 weeks in, Dave, I battled through,
yeah.
and you know, I read the books. I would read the normal font books with lots of lighting. I would read for about 30 minutes, I'd take 30 minutes off. I'd read for 30 minutes, I'd take 30 minutes off. And about 6 weeks in, I went back to the Disability Services office, a month in, and said, look, there's a group out there that can reproduce these books for me, and I've convinced them that they'll turn it around, you know, in a very quick manner, and that my family is willing to pay for it if I can get reimbursed at a later time, or I'm willing to take out loans to do it. But I've got to get these books. Tell me what I need to do for you to either get these books for me or for me to get them myself.
Okay.
They still refused. And so I went home and said, well, now I'm really in a bind here. And I called my parents and I said, look, I can't do this anymore. This is how I'm reading. I'm, you know, reading half hour on, half hour off. I'm going to bed at 4 in the morning, getting up at, you know, 8:30 to go to class. And, you know, I feel like I'm losing lots of ground and I'm not able to do the same thing these other students are doing, but I know I could do it if I had large print books. And what
yeah.
I told my parents are, look, this university is not going to get me the accommodations I need this semester. I'm starting to get blind spots when I read. I mean, I'm reading and I'm getting exhausted and I'm not getting through the material.
Yeah.
I don't believe that I can do it and I don't believe I'm going to be able to get through. And I think that I'm going to go talk to my school tomorrow and say, look, There's folks out there that can provide large print books. Maybe we can't get it this semester. I'm going to have to take either the semester or the year off because at this rate, I won't make it. And I was literally, Dave, on the verge of dropping out of law school 6 weeks in because the Disability Service Office was unwilling to provide me with accommodations, was unwilling to listen. But I found Huge Print Press. And I found them on the internet,
mm-hmm.
and they told me that, look, I called them in a panic and said, this is where
mm-hmm.
I am. They said, what we can do for you is if you'll overnight the books to us, we'll reproduce these books, we'll customize these books for you, and we'll get them to you within 2 weeks. Not only that, we'll get what you need for the next week of reading and for the next week of reading to you within a couple of days
mm-hmm.
so that you can have a bridge between now and the time that you get all of your books. And, Dave, these books got to me within 2 weeks, and I can tell you that I talked to my parents. They said that, they pick up whatever portion they could financially, and
mm-hmm.
if not, that we would get a loan for it.
Let's just give people a sense of what kind of cost is involved.
Sure.
I mean, law books are very big, weighty tomes, aren't they? I mean, even the regular size print, I mean, they're huge.
That's right.
Absolutely massive. And journals as well. There's so many law journals out there, it's untrue. So in terms of the cost per page, bearing in mind that you'd probably be reading hundreds, if not thousands, of pages.
Sure.
What kind of cost are we talking about?
The cost per page that we talk about, and I'm going to give you the price I paid, then I'll tell you the price
that it is now, yeah.
That it is now.
Mm-hmm.
Initially, when I bought my books, I had paid in the neighborhood of $2 a page to get the material.
Bearing in mind that you're probably reading hundreds, if not thousands, of pages.
That's absolutely right. I mean, every book was, you know, over 1,000 pages long. I mean, my books cost, Dave, $12,000. I mean, that's that's half of a year's tuition almost.
Yeah.
In law school, for to just to get books when everybody else is paying a few hundred dollars for the books. I'm going out there, and the school ultimately picked up the tab, and all schools out there have to pay for these services, and that's what we'll get to later. But anyway, we realized that it would be, you know, a financial challenge and burden.
That was the cost at that time, we should emphasize. That's not the cost today. That's not the cost today. That's the cost at that time, yeah.
That's exactly right. It was $2 a page. You know.
What kind of era are we talking about? Is this the 80s? When was this?
No, this was last summer.
This is okay. Right.
this is last summer that we're talking.
I apologize.
About.
I was almost insinuating that you're an older gentleman. There we are.
Well, I am. I think.
M.A. Patel, a man of youth.
Excuse me, Dad. No, yeah, just I'm only a year and a half into law school, so we're talking about just.
You're still in law school then?
Yeah, I'm still in law school. I'm halfway through law school. So
okay.
These are all challenges that. That I faced in just a year ago, and so it was $2 a page that I paid then to get my books. But now the prices have come down, and there's a range depending on the sort of book that's being reproduced, anywhere from 20 cents a page to on the top end, and the top end $1 a page, because.
Presumably that would be for things that are quite technical with them.
Exactly. Organic chemistry book is going to be at the top end of a page. If you're reading a typical novel that you pick up at Barnes & Noble, it will be closer to the 20 cents a page.
So within a year, the cost has come down by, you know, a considerable amount to 50%, or in some cases as little as 10% of what it would have cost just a year ago.
That's right. That's exactly right. And the reason for that, I know you want to stay focused on sort of my journey. We'll do that. So anyway, we got the books, and Dave, I went from I was on the verge of dropping out of law school to finishing in the top third of my law school class after, in my opinion, giving everybody else in my class a 6-week head start.
Congratulations, that's a quite an achievement.
Only, and the only reason I disclose that is because we can compete. Students with low vision, students who are blind, can compete at any level doing anything if they will be given the resources necessary to do so. There is no question that our community is as intelligent, is as hardworking, and as capable as any other person in the world.
I don't think many people listening to this program would question that at all. I think that's
The problem is that there are individuals out there outside of our community that think that, they're challenged, or they have a disability.
Oh, absolutely,
Or they have this shortcoming and that shortcoming, and as a result, they can't achieve and accomplish. Yes, we can. Yes, we can. There's examples every day that we can point to. Every day, examples that we can point to. And if you'll give us the opportunity, we'll
be there.
Them wrong
we'll
every
be there.
Time.
Absolutely. Well, congratulations with the progress that you're making with your law studies. Let's talk about Huge Print Press then. What's your involvement with Huge Print Press today?
I am now a partner, and let me back up. Huge Print Press was a firm in Southern California a year ago, and it was a group that had a nice idea of catering and working with the low vision community. Unfortunately, they took the business as a part-time job and sort of did it when they could. And it was a retired school teacher that was working on it. And we talked to them and realized that this was a badly needed service. And that while they were sort of customizing font sizes for individuals, and while they provided my books on demand, that wasn't their business model. Their business model was, providing large print books, novels, and such whenever they could. We realized that there was a real need in the academic community to provide textbooks on demand, customized for that person's need. And so this past summer, we were fortunate enough to persuade these individuals to turn over the reins of the company. And we, my brothers and I, my older brother, younger brother, and my cousin, took over the company this past summer. And as a result, you've seen a significant reduction in pricing.
So there are four partners then?
Four partners now. So I'm an owner of the company.
It's a family-run business.
Family-run business. And if you'll notice, Dave, the reason I wanted to tell you the pricing as it was a year ago compared to the pricing today, because I want to convey that we are a family affected with low vision, serving the low vision and blind community, and we are trying our hardest to provide the, you know, to lower the pricing as much as we can, because we realize that even though people in the low vision community, people in the blind community, don't have to pick up the tab for these accommodations, whether it's Braille, large print, e-text, we realize that the schools have have varying budgets, and that they are going to give resistance because they don't want to pay. And so we have refined our pricing so much so that now there's no excuse for those schools to deny the accommodations to these students. And that's why, since we've taken over, we've depressed the pricing as much as we have, and we tell all schools that, look, we'll work with you. Mm-hmm. The last thing on earth we want to do is price our students that we serve out of this product.
Okay.
Schools are paying, they have huge budgets, and are willing to pay for all sorts of accommodations for different students. They ought to be willing to pay for these as well.
Tell us about your services, tell us about the range of services you offer, who your clients are, and what sort of volume of material that you guys are processing.
Okay, let me answer.
There's a lot of questions there, I apologize. I'm guilty of that. I've been accused of that before. I ask about five questions at once.
Sure, no. We serve two distinct markets. One would be the textbook market, and the other would be the leisure market. So let's answer your questions in the context of the textbook market. What we do is this. If a student shows up to school and needs their books reproduced, if it's a low-vision student and they need their books reproduced in large print, what would happen is this. They would get their syllabus, tell us what books they need, tell us what font size they want to read it in, tell us what font they want to read it in, and any other sort of slight accommodations they might want to need.
Mm-hmm.
They might
want wider margins.
That's
or,
right.
Yeah.
That's right. If they want more line spacing and things like that,
yep.
We will reproduce those books. We'll take the original books, recreate those books in large print for those individuals in font sizes ranging all the way from 14, 16, all the way up. We've done books as high as 48 font.
My goodness. Physically, how high is that from like the baseline to the top of the letter?
It's probably an inch and a half to two inch range.
Yeah.
And it's rare that we get those requests, mm-hmm. Dave. It's rare. Most of our requests are in the low 20s, mid 20s, but sometimes you do have individuals that say, look, I've been a reader all my life. My vision has recently deteriorated. I'm a visual learner,
mm-hmm.
and I want to continue to read, and I want books in 48 font. And
yep.
who are we to tell that individual what they ought to read?
Right. So you convert textbooks, academic material for students.
We customize the books for their reading needs.
That's one area of your business, and you customize.
The other is we've found that lots of students that who are blind need who prefer to or choose to read or choose to listen to use Kurzweil or other readers prefer books need books e-text. So we would provide the e-text on demand for that individual. So we would take the original book, clean it up in terms of formatting and style, and provide a clean e-text version for the student as well. And so we can either provide the e-text or the large print version, whatever the student needs, whether it's a blind student or a low vision student. And we provide all those services, Dave, within 2 weeks.
Wow.
We make sure that our goal is to make sure that the student has something in their hands the day that classes start, because mm-hmm. we don't want them to fall behind.
So your students, they're your priority group then, I guess.
Exactly. They're our number one group because
yeah.
they're the most immediately impacted.
Yeah.
And we go from we work with college students, and we also work with K-12 as well.
Now you mentioned the leisure market as well. Let's talk a little bit about
sure.
that.
You have a growing in the United States, and I think worldwide, you have a growing population that is suffering from vision loss, and aged macular degeneration is one of the biggest reasons for that. And you have individuals that have read all their lives, love to go to Barnes & Noble or any other bookstore and pick up a book and say, hey, I want to read this. And now they can't read it.
Mm.
And they still want to continue to read.
Yeah.
And so just like we customize textbooks for students, we customize novels for the leisure reader.
Mm.
And so you tell us if you want to read the latest John Grisham novel or whatever novels there are, and, you know, the latest we have.
The Da Vinci Code or whatever.
Da Vinci Code or Harry Potter
yeah, yeah.
or the you know, whatever it is that you want to read, mm-hmm. you tell us what book you want to read, you tell us what font size you want to read it in, and we'll get that book to you. And even for non-students, for individuals like myself who are in school or will be through with school ultimately, mm-hmm. You know, who have a passion for reading, we're not going to read textbooks all our lives.
No.
We want to read the you know, New York Times bestseller, or the, you know, your best-selling list or whatever it might be, or the Financial Times, whatever it might be. We want to read all those books that they're recommending.
Mm-hmm.
And those books don't come in large print. And if they come in large print, they come in limited font sizes. We want to read those books too. And so for mm-hmm. those individuals who have a desire to continue reading beyond the academic context, who have a desire to read novels and bestsellers and new releases,
mm-hmm.
We want to provide those books for you.
Rarely does a conversation about accessing books by people who have low vision or people who are blind go by without the difficult and sometimes contentious issue of copyright.
Sure.
Being raised. Can you speak to that for us and tell us how copyright affects you guys and what the current state of play is regarding copyright?
Sure. I won't go into too depth a legal discussion about copyright. Let me answer your question in this way, and if you need me to give you more, I certainly can try. One is when we reproduce a book for individuals who have low vision or who are blind, we require that individual buy the original book. And so every time we provide a book in large print, the original book is getting purchased. And so the publisher and the author are not being deprived of their royalties. And so if we sold 10 of the same book, well, we would require all 10 individuals to buy 10 copies of the book. And so that the publishers financially are not impaired in any way by the services we provide. I don't foresee anybody, I don't foresee ever there being a legal argument about copyright, because and from a publisher's perspective, from our community's perspective, that's not good for anybody. The publicity that would be attached to that, the costs that are associated with that. Nobody wants to go to court. Nobody wants to fight any sort of legal battle.
Mm.
We want to work together and cooperate. And we have found, Dave, that many publishers are very open to the needs of the low vision community, while they themselves might not convert text to Braille, or they themselves might not provide e-text or large print. They are perfectly understanding of the need facing our community, and will provide permission and will give a blessing, if you will, to provide that text for the low vision community. We have a good relationship with publishers now. Publishers call us all the time saying that we have individuals that need books in large print. Can you provide it for them? And we, obviously, without fail, we'll provide those books to them. We are currently talking to a couple of publishers about possible licensing agreements. So when people talk about copyright, implicit in that is a legal question of, are you violating copyright? Would you win a copyright battle? But I agree with you, Dave. I don't believe that it will ever get there, and I don't believe that it ever needs to get there, because if we cooperate, publishers and providers alike, we think that we can accomplish all that both sides would like to see accomplished. From a publisher's perspective, ensuring that they maximize their royalties. From our perspective, making sure that the service of large print and e-text is provided to as many people as possible. From the reader's perspective, making sure that you get access to the materials you need in the most timely manner. So we believe that while people love to bring up the copyright issue, instead of copyright, let's talk about cooperation.
We've touched on a range of issues, and we've certainly talked about your journey and Huge Print Press and where that's come from and possibly where it's going. Is there anything we haven't talked about that you'd like to mention, Abay?
While the specific needs, as you said earlier, of the low vision and the blind communities might be different, fundamentally, we all are in need of the same things.
Yeah.
From a foundation perspective, we know that if all of our communities can maximize their education potential, if that's the foundation that we are laying for our for our youth that we know that we can be very, very successful in the future. And any battle that we face, whether it's in terms of accessibility or otherwise, we know that we can overcome. And so while our needs might be slightly different in some contexts, we need to work together. We need to help one another. We need to advocate together. We need to be aggressive together. We need to be ambitious together. And we can't take no for an answer, Dave. Our groups have been intimidated time and time again, whether it's in the academic context or whether it's in any other in the professional context. We have to be fighters. We have fought all our lives with the unique challenges that each of us face, just to get through, just to get by, whether it's academically or otherwise. Well, we have to continue that fight and say and realize that we have the same rights that everybody else does. Access is a civil right. If we're going to be given the opportunity to compete and achieve, we have to be afforded that civil right of access in whatever form that may occur. And so what I want to stress to individuals is don't take no for an answer. Don't run into a wall and sit down. We have to continue to fight. Let's fight together, and there's no question that we can accomplish great, great things in the years ahead.
We'll take your contact details in a moment. Does Huge Print Press, you mentioned books, obviously. Are you guys just limited to books, or do you do documentation, menus,
all kind of? We can provide, I use books as an umbrella term, and I get the question you ask a lot.
Mm-hmm.
We can provide books, we can provide magazines, we can provide, instructions,
mm-hmm.
Pamphlets, other documents, anything that is text intensive.
And you can do that in large print or e-text.
Anything that you need can be reproduced.
So if somebody's just bought a washing machine and they want to access the documentation and they don't have access to a scanner, they can contact you guys and you might be able to make that available to them.
We will definitely be able to make that available. And when we talk about, I'd like to stress, when we talk about on the e-text side,
mm-hmm.
We want to ensure everybody that our e-texts are clean. I mean,
mm-hmm.
we strive on accuracy.
Mm-hmm.
Someone who's used our books in the past, if you will, when I'm reading the law books, we can't afford for mistakes to be there.
Mm-hmm.
And we believe that our e-text or our large print material are in the 99% accuracy rate.
Mm-hmm.
And so we want to ensure that when you're purchasing from us, if you're receiving from us e-text or large print, it's going to be as close to the real deal as it possibly can
right.
be.
And the price is subject to the type of material that's being processed, and so people should call. You don't have a price list as such, do you?
Right, we don't exactly, because our inventory is globally infinite, and it truly varies on the product.
So people, even if they've got a way out there kind of question, they should contact you anyway, because I mean, you know, the worst you can do is say no, but you'll evaluate every case on its own merits. And
absolutely.
Okay.
And we can keep in mind that the range I gave you earlier, of 20 cents a page to a dollar a page, that's for large print
yes.
Books. For e-text, it's significantly cheaper.
Yeah.
We would say that most of our e-text comes out in the 40 to 50 cent range and cheaper, depending on the book.
Right. Okay. Let's take some contact details then. Huge Print Press. How do we get a hold of you?
Okay. Our website is one place to start, and that's www.hugeprint.com. We have email and phone information on that. Our 1-800 number, for those who'd like to call us directly, is 866-484-3774.
Do you want to give that just again? Somebody called me the other week and said, you never get people to repeat phone numbers.
Absolutely. The phone number again is 866-484-3774. And our email address is info@hugeprint.com. Again, that email address is info@hugeprint.com.
And most people listening to this will have net access, so they can, you know, check out your website, www.hugeprint.com. Well, it's been a pleasure. I've really enjoyed speaking with you and catching up with you since convention, and wish you the very best of luck with all your projects in the future, and thanks for taking the time to talk to ACB Radio.
Thanks, Dave. Thanks so much for your time. Thank you for everybody in your audience for taking the time to listen to us, and you know, if we can help in any way, please be in touch with us, and we'd love to work with you on whatever your needs are. Thanks a lot.